Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Steph, and this is episode 5 of the Motherhood series of the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. I am currently sat on a bed in a B&B in Nailsworth near the Don't Buy Her Flowers warehouse. I'm down here for a couple of days with the team. We're all busy with Mother's Day. Doug is holding the fort at home. I've just spoken to them all, and there was absolute chaos because it was just sort of heading into bath time, so I'm kind of glad to be not there, much as I love them all dearly. There's about another week to get orders in if you're looking for a thoughtful gift that's going to be all about giving someone a bit of time for themselves. It could be with a good book, bath soak, gin, loads of delicious chocolates and treats. Oh, loads of gorgeous products. So go to don'tbuyherflowers.com, and £1 from every Mother's Day order is going to Homestart UK, who are an amazing charity that help families going through difficult times. In this episode, my guest is international DJ, broadcaster, and now author, the artist formerly known as Annie Mac, is Annie McManus. Everyone I spoke to said, oh, she's so cool, and definitely implied that I'm not, which is fine because I'm fully aware of this. But Annie's big kind of theme is change. So she has a podcast called Changes, which is awesome. She speaks to incredible variety of guests about changes that have happened to them or they'd like to happen to them. But Annie also talks in this episode about leaving Radio 1 last year and how people reacted to that, not all of them favourably, after 17 years, as well as how she feels about it now and recognising how much she gave of herself on the radio and that she wanted to retreat a bit when she left. She also talks about fighting against her career kind of being compromised or feeling like it might be after having children, which I think was really difficult given that there were literally thousands of people chomping at the bit for this dream job that she had. We also talk about change at 40, and Annie stopped to say, what do I actually want, and kind of audited her life, which has got to where she is at the moment. And I have to say, she sounds really happy and content. And we had Jessie Ware on a previous episode, and she talked about turning to Annie when she was thinking of having kids, and she seems to be this real figure of wisdom among her friends, which definitely comes across. This episode was recorded a couple of weeks ago, just as the invasion of Ukraine was hitting the news, and there was, as there still is, this real uncertainty and kind of horror across social media, as well as across the media and in people's conversations. Just as we were feeling like COVID was kind of less of a threat. So lots going on. And we started the conversation talking about social media.
So the first time that I've read any of your writing, because I wanted to talk to you quite a bit about, obviously, change, that's your thing, but and where you've changed all the career stuff that's gone on the last couple of years. But the first thing I read that you wrote was your post about social media, the one called Using. And I read it and I shared it with everyone I know. And I thought it's particularly relevant at the moment because obviously we're talking at the moment where there's like looking at the news this morning and there's like rockets going off and paratroopers and the invasion in Ukraine. And it's so overwhelming. Do you feel a pressure to post? Do you feel like I need to say something? Because I think there's loads of people saying that there's kind of this narrative going on about it's not right to be posting your normal stuff, but also, oh, we need to have a take on this and I need to have an opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I really struggle with that, to be honest. Like at Christmas time, so just to kind of explain the bones of the article, I started using this app, which basically restricts, it's so meta. It's an app that you have to download that then restricts your social media use. But it means that I have 2 hours a day where I can check my socials. And it really worked. And it still really works, actually. I've completely changed how I scroll, because I got a bit scared of how much I was scrolling coming up to Christmas, and also how that was making me feel, and how insidious it was, and how it kind of crept in, and you end up feeling lonely and isolated, and kind of you have this kind of irrational view of yourself, that if you kind of take yourself out of the world of social media, you can, you feel much more balanced and much more sane, basically. So I kind of made a point of doing that. And since I've been on social media much, much less, that exact problem is the issue now, where I feel like I only post when I feel very compelled to do it, when I have something to say, when I feel like I have something useful to give or to put out there. That could be posting about a podcast, posting an article, whatever. I don't really post any other time. So when the Ukraine stuff happened, I was initially just like, I have nothing to say. There's nothing I can say that can make this better. I'm overwhelmed. I don't want to feel like I have to post just for the sake of it, because everyone else is, what's it going to do, basically? And it took me kind of a whole week to kind of process how I felt about it. And I still don't know how I feel about it, apart from all the standard feelings of overwhelming and fright and, all that. But I did do a post, but I think the post was kind of initiated because I felt like, God, I have to mention this. If I'm mentioning other things, I have to mention this. So I guess there still is that kind of pressure to comment on what's going on in the world and to have a take, as you say. I saw a guy who I really respect on Twitter saying, oh my God, I can't believe how silent everyone's being, about the war. And I felt complicit. I was like, I am being silent, but I don't know what to say.
It's so difficult because it's really nuanced, isn't it? And I think it feels a bit fucked up that social media becomes like a barometer of whether someone is a good person. And that's where you're like, so if you don't say something, and I imagine anyone with a big account, you get messages from people saying, well, have you not got anything to say on this when something big happens? And it's like, but that's not you, that's not who you are, that's not your specialist subject. And then so you're suddenly trying to get loads of people just to have an opinion on, an expert opinion and the right opinion on something that you don't necessarily feel you understand. It's really difficult. Right.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And it shouldn't have to be that way. And maybe it isn't. That's the other thing. Maybe like, I don't think that there was people being like, well, why hasn't she posted about Ukraine? I think that was me. I think it came from me. So again, I think it's about having conviction in how you use social media and not allowing yourself to, get swept along in it. And it's a work in progress, it's a real work in progress, and it takes a long time. As I said, it's a very insidious, addictive thing. And you can't just stop it and then be fine. It's like anything. You have to constantly work at removing yourself from it.
There was a line, so you said about the end of 2021 feeling like it messed with your head, and you said you felt you were lagging behind, and I wasn't achieving enough, running enough, cooking enough, socializing enough, working enough, mothering well enough, and then also that it left you feeling lonely. And it's like that, like we already feel all those things, and then it kind of exacerbated by social media.
100%. And with all the best intentions, following all the people that you love and you admire, and you can't help, when you look at social media, feeling like other people are passing you by, or life is passing you by. That's the very nature of it, the comparative culture. And it's very dangerous in that way. You have to be really, you have to be super strong, really thick skinned, or you just have to be able to be really adept at, you know, changing the people you follow, you know, being, you know, being really fluid with that.
Mm.
But it's kind of, you know, even then, if you follow, like, which I do a lot of charities, a lot of people who are kind of, who are, you know, philanthropic and putting stuff out there that is for the good of the world. Then the problem with that is that it's constantly the trauma of the world.
Yeah.
So it's constantly the people who are most in need, the things you should be doing to help. And then that in itself is overwhelming too, because it's just about trying to have a balance, basically, mm-hmm. and dipping in when you want. But what I found when I stopped social media is when you look at it for an hour a day, right, what you realize is that you don't actually want to see anyone else's life, because it's not natural to want to do that. It's not natural for me to want to look on your stories and see what you're having for dinner. It's not like in real life, I wouldn't know what you're having for dinner.
And you wouldn't give a shit. Like, yeah.
So it's that, you know, so and vice versa. So it's like, when you stop using it, you're like, you don't have that compulsion to go and click into people. I find you just flick through and you're like, there's absolutely nothing here that I want to see.
And maybe you see as well, like, the bullshit of it. So it's like, exactly. Well, that the kind of a performative side of it. But the other thing that you wrote that I was like, oh, I don't think I've heard anyone say that, was about thinking in social media posts. So I think you were with your son and he was like digging a trench, and your head in your mind, even when you're not got your phone with you, is like writing a post of, oh, that would make a good post and I could have said this. And that's so and I exactly know what you mean. Even in the night sometimes when you can't sleep and your head's whirring and you're thinking of a social media post, like, that's really weird. And I don't think people want to admit to that because it's also embarrassing. It's shameful.
But you're conditioned. You're absolutely conditioned to see life in terms of how you present it to other people, as opposed to how you are actually experiencing it in the now. And I think that becomes, you know, a thing very quickly on social media, where you know, it's if you, this is the other thing you notice when you're not on it, is if you're not on it and you haven't posted and you go on it, the one thing that happens, there's two very visceral feelings that you get. The first is, I'm not, you know, the whole classic comparison culture, you know, they're doing that, I'm not, basically. The second is, I need to post. In order for me to look like I'm doing what they're doing, I need to post now. And you're looking around, you're like, what can I post about? I'm literally in my pajamas. I've sat at home in the office writing for 6 hours. I have to do the school run. There's nothing to post about. So then you start thinking about what to post about. And that's what social media does. It makes you feel like you have to join in the throng and be doing what everyone else is doing. So a lot of the time people post just for the sake of posting, which is why you get 98% of on there is really not, there's not much going on there.
No. But and I was listening to on your podcast, your interview with Nick Grimshaw, and you guys were talking about when you both left Radio One, the realization that you've been sharing like thoughts and stories for 14 and 17 years respectively. And I was thinking, I suppose in a similar way, your day at that point, you must have been constantly thinking of, oh, well, that's something I could share, or that's something that would make a good anecdote or anything, in a similar way to social media. So I suppose when you then left, it was the same thing.
Yeah, it's very much the case. You know, you've got used to being able to share your anecdotes and share your life on the radio in this kind of very physical way and hugely public way. And you become desensitized to that. And also you become good at editing it so that it works for radio and you're not giving too much away and all of that, you know. But yeah, so the double whammy of no kind of audience to share to, no audience who are listening.
Yeah.
And then not being on social media, it's quite something. But it's also good because, you know, talking about Radio One, so much of the first 6 months after leaving Radio One for me was just like not wanting to do too much deliberately and just allowing myself to go through the phases of feeling what I was feeling. Mm. And one of the first things that I felt was this reaction to being in the public ear, we'll say, for 17 years. Mm. You know, and most of the time I'm hiding behind music there. So I'm not like Grimmy. I'm not doing a daytime entertainment show. I'm not giving away that much about myself. But the very nature of being in a room and talking to my audience every day for 2 hours and being in people's kitchens and cars and being in their lives in this very intimate one-to-one way, it means that I was giving myself to people, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think about that at the time, but how that kind of manifested was afterwards is I just wanted to hide. I really felt like I wanted, and not in a bad way. It wasn't like trauma. It was just mm-hmm. like I had this compulsion to kind of like a snail in the shell, just be in myself for a while and mm-hmm. just be in my house and be with my family and just exist in my own world without putting myself out there in any way and kind of see how that felt basically.
And how is it feeling now? Because it's sort of 6 months, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more. It's more. And it feels wonderful, thank you.
It does
feels it? Really good. Yeah, it feels really good. Like, again, I don't want that to sound denigrating towards radio or my job. I loved my job, but it's more just there's something lovely in the very slow kind of routine way that I'm living life at the moment. I just do writing, I do podcasting, I pick up the kids from school, I have early dinners with friends, and life is very quiet. Mm. And what's happening is I'm realizing that the time that I used to spend, you know, legging it around and trying to make things work and being on the radio, I'm using to flex my brain muscles a bit more. Mm. So I'm reading loads, I'm thinking loads, I'm having time to figure out how I feel about things and work through stuff in my head and also write, which also, you know, is so good for the muscles in your brain, mm-hmm. you know. So I feel much more kind of, as hippie as this sounds, but I feel much more in tune with myself, I suppose.
When you said it was like, basically you hit 40 and it felt like, or you were turning 40 and it felt like a midlife crisis almost, or an enlightenment, something shifted. And I think that's really common, because I know I turned 40 last year and was like, I feel like I need to discover myself more. I need to learn why I do certain things. Why do I behave in certain ways? Is this how I want to live? It's that kind of shift. But your thing is obviously like human connection. So actually, although you've changed what you do quite dramatically in some ways, you also are doing the same thing through writing, through the podcast. It's still all connecting.
That's so true. Like that is my thing. And, you know, it takes a while to figure out what your thing is and why you keep gravitating towards the same things. But connection is 100% it. I only ever want to connect with people and talk to people. And I think the articles that you mentioned earlier, mm. you know, just writing articles from home, partly that's me just trying to become a better writer, but it's also my way of connecting to the world when there is no radio and that kind of thing. Turning 40, I did have, very similar to you, this kind of compulsion to ask questions and this really very clear need to learn something new, to try something new, to push myself out of my comfort zone. And writing was always something I wanted to do. And, you know, I've spoken so much about the book that I wrote and kind of the reasons why I wrote it. But I think there's something about the extreme opposites in terms of what writing was as opposed to radio.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about how I wanted to learn something, right, and learn something new, but also how everything was like unconsciously reactionary to what had come before, as you know, so radio and DJing. Mm. Writing is, you know, this very quiet, very introspective, solitary process where I'm sat in a room on my own for hours. It is slow. It takes so long to create something. It's chipping away at this big thing that then takes a year to come out to people. And like, compare that to radio and DJing, which is like massive, loud chaos, noise, immediate reactions, surrounded by people either in my ears or in the room. It's so extremely opposite. And I, you know, I didn't think about it at the time until I started talking about it. And then I was like, wow, I really have gone the complete opposite direction. And I think as well, the contents of my book was similar to that as well. Like, everyone assumed that I should write about clubbing and raving and culture and all that. And I wrote about, you know, this kind of lonely, very sad woman in her 30s.
It's dark. I've just finished it last week and it's beautiful. Like, it's exactly as you say, it's not what you would necessarily expect, but I think that makes it even, but I don't think I had any expectation. I didn't know what it was going to be about, really. But yeah, you've got addiction and grief and trauma, and the characters in it are so lovely. I really want for them to be okay and for them to be happy. But I should mention, it comes out in paperback, and it will be in Don't Buy Her Flowers gift packages, available to choose from our book selection,
which is so fab, by the way. I love
that. Thanks very much. Yeah, well, I've had loads of babies and got loads of flowers and was like, this is awful. Why are people giving me shit to do with flowers?
Well, I actually saw Caitlin Moran saying about gift cards. Did you see her?
Yes, books. Yeah, well, books sell, are really popular, because also reading, again, I suppose it slows you down, doesn't it? It's something that, and I think probably really common in women and mums, to not read. Like, I read on holiday, or I used to only read on holiday, and I loved it. Right. But that was when I could find time to do it. And now I'm making more effort to read all the time, and you get so much from it. The escape, the, like, you learn stuff, the, But no, it is, it's beautiful. And I think it will be really interesting to see what you do next, because I think I've read that you're going to do something that is more a memoir, or based around your life more.
Yeah, so this next one is like a reaction to Mother Mother. So where Mother Mother, the book jumps around a lot in time, and it's about, you know, it's set in Belfast, which is a city that I don't live in and haven't lived in for 20 years. This one is set just down the road in Kilburn, where in Northwest London,
right?
And is over the course of a year, and is about a girl who lives with a rock band and wants to get into music. So a lot of the themes are really similar to stuff that has gone through, that I've gone through. So I've written about what I know, and that has been such a joy and such a pleasure, and again, a completely different writing experience. So it, you know, I just, with writing, I am still kind of astounded by how much I love it. Like, I feel a bit sad today because I handed in a draft, draft 3 of this new novel.
Yeah.
And I feel bereft when I don't get to write, basically, which it sounds so cringy, but this is, I'm just learning it about myself. There's such a good feeling being in the throes of a book or a writing project where you are kind of, there's this whole other world going on in your head that is completely fictional, that exists in only your mind, that you can kind of slip into at any point and just exist in and be in with all these characters that you're getting to know and love. And it's just like, it's complete escapism. And in a world of, you know, as you say, impending war and scary or overwhelming things, sometimes having this world is just the most comforting, lovely place to exist in.
But also, if you think, like, if we might work for 50 odd years or something, like, we've still got quite a few years left of work potentially. And actually, anyone I've seen that did retire, really, I think in the 80s it was always the aim to retire at 50, and everyone just looked miserable and a bit crack, you know, they didn't have enough going on. Whereas if we might work for loads more years, of course it makes sense that we might evolve, and we don't need to be pigeonholed into a lifelong career that is the only thing that you know and do.
That's really the thing, and that's been the huge light bulb moment for me over the last few years, is that, you know, even when you're in a job on paper that looks like the best job in the world, if you yourself feel like you've kind of moved on from that job, then it's, you know, that you need to be able to change that for everyone's sake.
Well, you had people saying, I think when you announced that you were leaving Radio 1, I think you had people who were disappointed in you.
Oh, Jesus, they were incensed. They were incensed. People were angry.
You owed them, or because it was the best job in the world? How could you possibly? Or because you're going to be a mum? And it was like,
I think it wasn't any of the reasons why. I think it was how me leaving made them think about themselves. And I really understand it. Like, I wasn't incensed back. I got it.
Yeah.
Because me being there for 17 years and then leaving is an end. It's an ending. And that means people have to then look at their own lives and think about how long they've been listening to Radio One and how long my voice has been in their life.
Mm.
And if it's ending for me, what does it mean for them? Where are they in their lives? And that's what a lot of people reacted, is saying, I've listened to you all the way through uni, all the way through my 20s. Now I have a baby. And so it's forcing people to look and acknowledge the passing of time.
Basically. 17 years has passed. Yeah, things have changed.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also people, you know, when you are that person that people find, you know, comforting or whatever, you know, they associate with a certain time of day, or you're just so intrinsic into their daily existence, and then you're gone. It's a kind of jolt of some sort. Mm. And so it's just being used to me, I suppose. It's the same as if there's anything that is you're used to, be it, you know, having a coffee every morning or whatever, and then that goes. It just takes. So I think it was that. It was a shock and a bit of forced self-acknowledgement of the passing of time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I was going to talk about the kind of fame versus celebrity thing. So if I mention to anybody that I know that, oh, I'm speaking to Annie Mac, they all immediately know, oh, we know her. And they all immediately say, You're cool, which I will come back to because I know you've spoken about that. But also it's this, it's not the idea of celebrity. So again, it comes across, it's because it's about what you do rather than what it gives you. Is that something that you deliberately tried to... It's quite a fashion, I guess, that you not necessarily striving for fame, but that you weren't looking for celebrity.
No, it wasn't actually. It wasn't like a deliberate move until I realized that I was starting to get a high profile off the back of radio and DJing. And I attribute that to the fact that I got to that point of having a high profile when I was a bit older. Mm. You know, so I didn't get my Radio 1 show till I was 26. So it wasn't until my late 20s that I started, you know, getting in the public eye in a big way.
Mm.
And by that time, I had already done the growing up and I was a bit more sure of myself and comfortable in my own skin. And I'm really grateful, so grateful for that, actually. Even though I was very hungry in my 20s and I wanted it all to happen quicker, I'm really glad it didn't.
Mm.
I needed that time to kind of be a complete mess in private. And I'm also glad that I didn't have a mobile phone until I was 19. Oh, I'm the last kind of generation of...
Yeah.
Last generation to not have a mobile phone in my teens, basically. And I'm so fucking grateful. So grateful.
Mm. My son's just got his first... So he's in year six, my eldest. Mm. And he was the last one in his class pretty much to get one, because I was just like, I don't think you need it. But they do now walk to, they can walk to school on their own. So it's like this big change. Right. We've just got secondary school places and all that stuff. Listen,
this is my biggest fear at the moment is when he gets the phone. And I've already told him that he will be the last person in the school to get the phone.
Yeah.
In my head, he's not going to get it till secondary school, but I think I'm not going to be able to wait that long. I think it might be sooner, but.
Yeah, it's really difficult when all their mates have got it, that it you kind of...
Yeah.
But yeah, but I tell you what is cute. He will text us, especially on the first day of getting, he'll text us from the next room, just like, hi, mum, how's it going? Bless you. Because he just wants to use his phone. And he's only got like 3 contacts in there, and that's basically me and his dad. But no, it's a weird thing. But and I think actually on social media, you say about wondering whether it will go full circle and we'll start to realise the impact. We have to at some point, right? Realise the impact it's having, and then maybe it will be cooler not to.
Yeah. So I get asked a lot by people why I don't put my kids' faces on social media. Mm. And again, that wasn't, I mean, obviously it was a conscious decision, but it wasn't like I didn't have the decision all nailed and my reason nailed when I started doing it. It was just an instinct that I didn't want to put their faces on initially. And then as they got older, I still don't. And part of the reason is because of that. It's like, I don't want my kid to get to like 16 and the thing to be totally that everyone wants to be off grid. And you know, untraceable, and then him have to contend with, you know, 16 years of his mum's Instagram account of all his pictures of him as a baby, all over the world, so all over the internet. So yeah, it's just more giving him choices, giving him agency over his own image, basically.
Yeah. And with motherhood, you've talked about when you had your first, that feeling, that need to like rage against it. And that kind of get back to work quickly and get stuck in, and almost, I guess, is that something that you feel in the music industry? You almost have to pretend that you don't have children?
Yeah, so it wasn't really about raging against motherhood, because I really like wanted to be a mom, and I loved everything about it.
Mm.
It was more raging against the idea of your career having to end because of motherhood.
Mm.
So I had no intention of stopping, and I was very determined to keep going. The nature of my job, especially in DJing, which was a really big deal for me when I had my first kid, I was doing everything DJ wise, was that you always have to plan kind of 8 months ahead. So you know, right now it's February, I can tell you what I'm doing in September, October now, kind of a lot of the time. And that's hard because you don't know how you're going to feel as a mom, but it meant that I had stuff in. My baby was born in May. I had stuff in June that I was doing. So I just had to get on with it, you know? And I was really happy to get on with it most of the time. As soon as I found a nanny, and she was settled in, then it became amazing. And you know, I found that the most difficult bit is finding the right childcare, finding people you trust, having someone that can fit into this family unit and that my baby loves, and that felt like a really hard work and a real achievement, you know, finding this new method of childcare. But what I realized the second time around was that I didn't want the childcare as much. And I had the childcare for the first few years because I was a full-time working mom. But by the time my kid was kind of 3 or 4, it was this realization that this is it now. I'm not having any more kids and I don't have much time left with my kid being this age. And I want to have all the time I can with him. So there was also a feeling of tiredness as well the second time round. It was like, God, I'm just knackered.
Yeah.
Just really tired. And I think that the second time round, maternity leave was really different. Like the first time round when I took maternity leave, it was so heightened by fear of my job being taken. I worked freelance. The BBC were really nice, really supportive. They never let me in any way think that my job wasn't safe. But the nature of freelance work and having the job that I had was that there was always loads of people who wanted my job.
Mm.
And so you're very conscious of that. And I think I took 4 months off the first time. And the second time, I think I took 6. And I was much more comfortable in my maternity leave, because I realized that my job was safe and I felt more secure in it. Mm. But yeah, I did try and kind of rail against the idea of my career being compromised because I was a mum, and I raged on and did more and more and more. And then, yeah, it was kind of the second kid that really made me stop and realize I needed a rest.
And was that when you started podcasting and looking at alternative routes, basically, to do what you love? But
I guess maybe... it was. And I guess that was subconscious as well. Like I kind of turned 40 when I had that realization. I came out of 2 years of my kid was 2. So I was just coming out of his toddler phase. Mm. He was starting to sleep through. I was starting to get clarity and kind of come out of this fog of tiredness. And it's when I was feeling these very kind of visceral compulsions to learn and do something new and try something new. And I think subconsciously those things were, I didn't know at the time, I didn't go at them consciously to be like, I want to find an alternative. It was more just, these are other things I want to try. Mm. And they ended up being a perfect alternative. So one of them was podcasting. I really wanted to own my own shit, basically.
Yeah,
I wanted to make a podcast that I owned, that I controlled, that I could do as and when I pleased. And that was a reaction to being at the BBC for years. Mm. And then the writing was just a very kind of long-term thing that I'd always wanted to do. It was more something I was curious about rather than ever thinking of it as a career. But then as I wrote and as I was kind of bowled over by how much I enjoyed it and loved it and found it so life-affirming, that's when I was like, right, how can I make this into something that I can do more? And then the next few years became this exercise in moving the furniture of my career, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I make space? How do I make more space to write? How do I make more space to podcast and see my kids? It was about laying everything out on the table in terms of what I want to do. And you can't underestimate that question, you know, how important that question is. What do you want? And I hadn't asked myself that in 10 years. I was too busy trying to hold it all down. Mm. And when you do ask yourself that question, which my manager had asked me to do, you know, he had said, what do you want? Let's do like an audit. Write down where you want to be in 5 years. I hadn't done anything like that in so long.
And it's funny because I think it's something especially women don't do, because we don't look at how we're feeling. We're too busy doing all the, exactly as you've just said, doing all the other stuff. And actually back to your book with Mother, it's like the main character, Mary, is giving everything to other people and then loses herself. And it's exactly the same thing. I think it's brave, and also it takes a confidence to make those changes, which when you've got a young family and you're trying to hold it together, you don't always have. So I think it's really useful to hear that not only have you done that, but how much better it feels.
Yeah, it does feel so much better speaking from the other side of that. It does feel really good. And there's a lot of things that you wrestle with along the way. You know, there's something about, you know, I don't want to gender stereotype, but in my experience of being a woman, I feel like putting yourself first is not something that I've done a lot of the time. And it's not something I see the other women in my life do a lot of the time. And there's a huge amount of guilt that comes with that, especially if you are in a family situation
mm-hmm.
where you have kids. you're used to being the subservient one. And I don't mean that in some old school kind of like, you know, way. I mean, just the one that takes the hit. And on top of that, you have the mental load of kind of running a household and remembering the dentist appointments and remembering the birthday presents and the homework assignments and all of that. And that's a whole other fucking podcast. You know, why that's on women. But I wrestled with the idea of putting myself first. And I think there was kind of conflicting feelings when I left Radio One, which was the way that I was talking was very kind of like, this is what I want. And I had it all worked out. And I think sometimes people don't think people reacted too well to some of that. And I don't know, I think that there's kind of an expectation that you should be happy with your lot. And then on top of that, there was the idea of me leaving and stating that one of the reasons of me leaving was that I wanted to spend more time with my kids when they were still young. And there was a conflict in that because I didn't know whether to say that because I knew that people would read it and kind of blow that up into something big, which they did. There was people, articles, whatever, saying that, you know, it didn't show a good example for women and working women that, you know, at this point in my career could go and leave that. But I found it the opposite. You know, for me, it felt like the most feminist thing I could do. It was very empowering for me to be able to leave this job because I wanted to. It was my choice to do that. And I think feminism is about choice, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's just this bullshit idea that you have to, it's just to be equal, we just have to want more. And it's like, no, equality should be that it's that we have the choice rather than we are always the one doing all the doing. But equally, if you choose that you want to do some of that or you want to be at home or any of that stuff, then you should also be able to choose that. It's such a one-sided narrative that's just doesn't fit.
And I think as well, like, it got lost, even though I again made a point of stating that I'm leaving Radio One so I can spend more time writing and podcasting, that got lost obviously, and the main headline was like,
just be at home baking, you know,
The Daily Mail put the headline, at 42, I've quit for the kids, which I never said, but it was that idea, like, I'm quitting it all for the kids, this big high powered career. I don't care anymore. I just want to be a mom.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, fucking great. Like, go for it. But because equally, you know, I hadn't had dinner on a weekday with my kid for his whole life. So why not quit for the kids? But it wasn't that. It was like, I was quitting in order to do work that suited me more for where I am in my life.
Also, it's impossible if you have to pretend that your family aren't important or that you're not going to make sacrifices for them. And it shouldn't just be obviously women that are doing that. It could be both men and women. And it's just what people want to put you in that place. Oh, it riles me a lot, I think. And also this idea of equality at work is really focused on, and actually it's the equality at home that is the massive challenge for most women I know, that is what holds them back from being able to do all those things that they actually want to do.
100%. And you know, that's the other thing that happened, you know, in me sitting and doing that, writing out my little plan of what I wanted to do in the next few years, it was redefining the idea of what success is, you know, and what you mentioned, this idea of success always being moving up higher on the bills, like more people at the shows, more listeners, more. This idea of success being success in terms of how you live your life and how your life is balanced, and success in terms of you getting what everything that you need in order to feel fulfilled as a mum, as a, you know, as a professional, as a friend, everything in between. And that's been something that's been a complete revelation to me, is like, success for me, I feel like successful now because of the work that I've put into feeling to trying to be balanced as a person. And that will change, as life always does. Something will get in the way and it will tip and I'll feel stress here and there, but that's what I find the hardest work, is like making sure that all the bits of me are fulfilled that I need to be fulfilled, and And that's not always about work, and it's not always about how you are perceived in the public eye or how your job is perceived in your your field.
What's your favourite thing about this period of life? So if this stage is kind of a rush hour, like we've talked about the kids and work and the juggling and everything, but obviously yours has changed, your circumstances have changed a bit recently. What's your favourite bit about it?
I'm just liking how quiet it is. Like I'm loving the writing. I'm loving having time to write. Before, when I wrote Mother, it was so frustrating not having time to write. And I would write everywhere I could. I'd be getting up early. I'd be doing it in Ubers. I'd be, you know, the idea of having a full day to write was like the stuff of dreams. Mm. And then it's being able to just be around and from my kids in the evening, like pick them up from school and not be rushing off and clock watching and stressed about interviews I haven't researched for and all of that, just to be able to relax into an evening and I can see it in my kids.
Do they acknowledge it? Do they realize?
Yeah, they do. They're more relaxed for me being more relaxed. Definitely they are. They just, you know, kids just like to know where they stand, you know. This is what I've learned. And there's something that the kind of solidity of me just being there every evening, I think, has really benefited them. You know, obviously they don't say that out loud, but you can see that they are more settled. My oldest is definitely more settled than he's ever been.
And it always works that when you're really stressed, I know, like if I'm trying to answer an email and someone's asking me, last night it was, can you make a shield? And you're like, yeah, okay. And you're rushing around and then you snap at them because you're actually trying to do a million things. Yeah. And it's so much better when you are able to breathe and go, yes, I can help you make a shield, because it's 5 o'clock and it's like, this is your time. Yeah. It's just difficult to put that in place. But it sounds as if that's exactly what you've worked really hard to do.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at the moment. Like I've never made a costume for World Book Day.
Right? Oh, fuck.
Until this year, Steph.
Oh, go on.
I got the yellow paper. I made a Mr. Happy costume for my youngest, except for the classic irony is I did it all 1 month early.
Oh, my God. Because you didn't know the date, or because you were just very...
I got the date wrong. But it's preserved for tomorrow, which is World Book Day. But so that shows, it's like, I've never been the mom that's even been in the WhatsApp group in school. I've been removed as a parent when it comes to all of that. I had to join my kids' year 4 WhatsApp group at the start of this year and be like, guys, I know I'm 5 years too late. Would you mind like allowing me to be in this WhatsApp group? And they were like gas about it. They were like, oh, do you want to go make some cookies for the bake sale while you're at it? Like, they know that I've always been that mum that just hasn't really been present when it comes to parenting in school.
Maybe this is the key to it all, to basically don't do it in those early years, which none of them remember anyway, and then appear now. And then everyone's like, wow, here she is, like this fucking shining light. And also it sounds like you quite enjoy it. Whereas like, I'm like, oh God, the WhatsApp group. We had a whole fuss because it was about 3 or 4 years in with my eldest, and I realized that there were no men on it. It's like the mum's WhatsApp group. Yeah. And it took me a while to realize that. And then I was like, can I just ask why there are no men on here? Because I want my husband to know if it's World Book Day or it's like spelling tests or swimming kit or stuff. Because otherwise it's all on you, isn't it? If you're the only one that, that knows. There was almost a mutiny. And then there was someone going, well, I don't think they want to be on here. And I was like, I don't want to be on here. And it just went deathly silent. And I was like, oh God, maybe it's gone too far. But it's a lot, isn't it? It's like, are there men on yours, or is it all mums?
You could write a sitcom about parent WhatsApp groups. It's incredible. But actually my husband took one for the team. Like he was the one who was on it all those years.
Good man.
And I wasn't.
Yeah.
So now we've done the swap. He's like, your turn.
Yeah.
And my kid my youngest is in reception. And so I've started on there. And that's really something, like when you have older kids in school and then you join a reception WhatsApp group and everyone's like totally panicking about, you know, what uniform they have to wear, send your kid in without a tie for a week. Like, that's definitely a mute situation. You're like, no,
everyone's chilled out a bit by year six for sure. It's very quiet.
Yeah.
I've got, my youngest starts school in September, so I've got to start it all over again, just as one leaves.
Oh my God.
Like, shit. Yeah. So how do you find peace in your week? Like, I mean, it sounds like writing is a big part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, writing is a big part of that. That's a very peaceful place for me, even when it's not really working out very well. I like trying. I really enjoy seeing pals for dinner, early dinner, like that. The early dinner thing,
early.
It's a real novelty for me. Like, going out at like 6 o'clock or 5:30 and seeing friends, and then being able to be home by like 9 and getting like that's amazing.
Yeah.
Exercise. I jog and that really helps me in terms of sort my head out. It's also, I've learned a really, really important part of writing is the jogs and the walks and the yoga, like anything that takes you outside of your body and just like puts you in this kind of semi-meditative state. Mm. Is really good for sorting out your thoughts and allowing new ideas to arrive and new inspiration. So I always come home from a jog and have to like write loads of things down that I've thought of when it comes to my characters in my book. So I've realized that is as important as writing, if you know what I mean.
The headspace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you sound like you've really got your shit together, Annie. It's impressive.
Well, it never lasts long, as you know. Scott.
In this moment.
Especially as a parent, you know, you can never take anything for granted. You know, as soon as you say, yeah, my kid sleeps through, you know, the next kid will start staying up all night. So I know from parental experience that nothing stays the same, but that's great. That's life. You just have to kind of keep. It's a work in progress, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've fashioned a life now that does allow for some flexibility, I guess, because you're your own boss. And I think that's why so many people. That's exactly why I did. So you're doing it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's so lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lovely to chat.
Thank you so much to Annie for speaking with me. I loved the idea of auditing your life and just really stopping to pause and think what you actually want. Also, I just love the idea of a World Book Day outfit a month early. Brilliant. I hope it went well, Annie. Thank you so much for listening. Go on and head to iTunes to rate and review and subscribe, or follow us on Spotify. We've a bonus episode with Rosie Ramsey next week, so you'll want to know when that lands. It's pretty juicy / smutty, as you expect, I think. Thank you. Have a good week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.